like a felon to darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Hey, folks, a special radio send-off to Phyllis Brooks, who passed away recently. I've known her for 40 years, and I'll certainly miss her. America's embassies are on alert. And to show the world we are tough. We mean business. We're gonna get our people out and cut and run. No way we would pull a cowboy maneuver and bolster our embassies, showing our enemies, mess with us at your peril. No way! Our commander-in-chief says, sneak away. Lair Adams for the American Adversary, Sunday Night Mayhem Show on 1520 WBZW. And while all of you are cowering in fear, there is other news. Iran has a new leader. Oops! I mean puppet. And New Yorker Anthony Weiner's campaign is becoming another cold cut due to the sausage-making of his inferiority complex. Now, my co-host gave that stuff up. He knows people are like sausage. Sometimes what's in them that you can't see can hurt you. Christopher Hart!
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show tonight. We want to thank you so very much for being with us. We are the American Adversaries, and it is our Sunday three-hour tour, and we hope you'll stay with us. We know that if you are listening on the airwaves, that means you are listening on 1520 WBZW. The Rays post-game show started a few moments ago. The game got over, and I believe the Rays won, didn't they?
Finally.
Yeah, 4-3. Yeah. Another big victory for the Rays, and they keep their hot streak going.
And a huge crowd at the park, too.
I believe it was sold out over there. And maybe one of our ticket winners was in the crowd as well.
Let's hope.
Okay, so congratulations to the Rays. And as soon as we do go back up on 660 WORL, we will definitely alert you folks who are listening on 1520 WBZW. Otherwise, if you can hear us, that means you're listening on your smart device or your computer, and we want to welcome all of you to the show tonight. And we've got a big show. We've got a lot of stuff packed, ready to go for you. We're going to move things up a little bit. We're going to move Nostradamus predicting the past up a little bit. Carl's Corner, we're going to move up a little bit because we have Scott Plakin, who's going to come in and join us in the studio this afternoon. And today we're going to talk with him about something called the Sanford Declaration. And I'll let him explain what it is, but it has to do with a group of pastors in the Sanford and Central Florida area coming together, and now pastors all over the country are beginning to take notice of this. So we're going to talk about that with Scott Plakin tonight. And then we also plan on Ken Dwyer and Dan Peterson coming in to talk with us about property rights. We have our Who Said That contest ready to go. We have another bottle of Roxy Pacifics to give away, and that stuff, folks, really does work. I'm using this stuff for everything. All of you should have a bottle of this in your medicine cabinet for any kind of skin irritation, skin burn, sunburn, oven burn, cuts, scrapes,
poison ivy, sumac,
mosquito bites, exactly, eczema, seborrhea, psoriasis. Try it on all those things. It's all natural. It is harmless, and it can bring a
cold
lot of
sores
relief.
In your mouth.
That's right, and you can use it on your pets, and it's safe for children as well. Everybody should have a bottle of this in your medicine cabinet. And so please help out Roxy Pacifics and us in the process, and we'll give away a bottle of that later on in the show. But in the meantime, if you want to go check them right now on the computer, if you're listening on the radio, don't do that if you're listening on the computer, but their computer site website is Roxy, that's R-O-C-Z-E-Y, Pacifics with an X, .net, RoxyPacifics.net. And the phone number is, and listen during our commercials, we give this out as well, 619-654-4829. For Roxy Pacific, 619-654-4829.
And that secret ingredient, folks, is kelp water. Where are you going to find that in anything else?
That's right. Okay, so we're going to be talking about a lot of things tonight, but the first thing I do want to talk about is, and Lair brought this up in his opening remarks, and that is the latest terrorist threat. We have our embassies and consulates shut down all across North Africa and the Middle East. And yes, Barack Obama was right when he said we have Al-Qaeda on the run. Unfortunately, he didn't tell us the flip side of that, which is that they are running right on our heels as we're hightailing it down the road, which is basically what's going on here. And did you, by the way, hear why they're taking this threat so seriously?
I thought they were all closed for his birthday today.
Well, it is, by the way, Barack Obama's birthday today. Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday, Mr. President.
No singing, Chris.
You don't look nothing like Marilyn Monroe, and I don't want you anywhere near some type of event blowing your skirt up, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Not a nice picture.
Anyway, yeah. It is today's the president's 52nd birthday, and I think that's one of the things, you know, there's... Personally speaking, I can't say I dislike the man because I don't know him, but I do dislike this about him. He's the first president in my lifetime younger than me.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. He has me beat by a year, yes.
So, anyway, yes, evidently the chatter is thick, but also the tone of it, but also the confidence that they can overcome our security measures. And one of the techniques that they may have used is surgically implanted explosives. Right. So how are we going to stop this now? What are we going to empower the TSA to do now? You know, if this is actually going to be borne out as the real threat. And if that be the case, obviously, there is no target that you can consider truly safe.
Yeah, because if it's remotely controlled, I guess you could do something that would, you know, send out a signal for everything. But if it's on a timer and surgically implanted, not much you could do.
As long as it's surgically implanted, it could have any kind of a detonating device. It could be remotely controlled by a telephone or a push-button device like you have for your garage door opener.
Mm-hmm. It may be a good time to start racial profiling and a separate... What's the area in which you land in an airport? Maybe there needs to be a separate...
like customs area?
Yeah, for Middle Eastern arrivals.
It seems to work for the Israelis. And they don't just profile based on a person's race or country of origin. They profile based on behavior.
Sure. They see someone flicking their eyes back and forth, nervous, looking around. Their agents are trained to notice it.
They notice all sorts of behavior. They are very much human behavior specialists, the language of human behavior. And so that's how they profile. They do it smartly. You know, they're not stupid.
Well, they're not worried about being politically correct, Chris.
Well, because they're more concerned about the existence of their nation.
Yes.
You know, and it's only because the threat is far more evident to them. See, the problem with the United States is the threat is more remote. Even though it's in Boston, even though it's in Fort Hood, it's still seen as a remote threat. But indeed, it is not. And as far as these threats go this weekend, They think that it will happen somewhere in that area because of the cells that they are picking up. And by the way, folks, the NSA program that collects data on United States citizens had nothing to do with the discovery of this. It was the same sort of technology being used over there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it had nothing to do, the spying, that, if you will, that they do on us, had nothing to do with uncovering this plot, if that's what it is.
Well, I think all of us will agree, you know, it's a lot that there is a threat there, but there's also how we handle these threats. I mean, that's what I was trying to mention in my closing, or in my opening, I haven't had the closing yet. Anyway, that's what I was trying to mention, is that how we handle these threats for the rest of the world, you know, before that cowboy type of bravado that we possessed, it seemed to work. You know, we were tough.
Well, as a matter of fact.
And they knew there was going to be retribution.
As a matter of fact, and I couldn't believe that I heard it coming out of this guy's mouth, but it was our morning joke, Joe Scarborough, this morning on NBC, who said that.
Oh, he did sound tough, didn't he?
Who said that our approval numbers are lower in these countries now than when President Obama took office. We have less respect. We have less admiration. We have less likability. Thank you to this president. Because he does project an image
of... He fired the sheriff.
He does project an image of weakness.
I wish Scarborough would have said that when it became relevant and true, which was as early as 2009. We were already losing respect the first year the gentleman was in office. So I'm glad to hear him finally say it 4 years later. But I wish he would have been more real, if you will, and early, and said it before the election. That would have been nice.
Oh, obviously. They knew it and didn't say it. But
and this comes on the heels of Benghazi. This is the reaction to Benghazi, which is, instead of being stronger, it's let's be weaker.
It's pretty much that. And when you take into consideration that we do not have the military assets spread around the world like we once had when this guy came to office, it's basically that's about all they can do. And that's the sad thing about it. The worst thing about it is President Obama doesn't mind that this is the image that we're projecting, obviously, because he goes on projecting it. So this works somehow for him.
Well, of course, because he can blame it on the sequester. Oh, yeah, yeah. This is Republicans, and they caused the sequester, and that's why the military has shrunk.
You don't understand what I'm saying. He would deny that he is projecting an image of weakness, so he can't blame it on a sequester. What he would suggest is that his is an image of strength when he actually does know that it is projecting an image of weakness. That works for him, but he cannot admit that in any way, shape, or form. The whole sequester thing, he loves it.
Well, I just think he falls back on the, oh, I'm being the reasoning person.
Oh, well, of course, all Democrats, all liberals
yes.
fall back on that.
Yes.
But obviously, there is
can't
nothing
to it. Can't be a hothead.
But nonetheless, there has been, to our knowledge, up to showtime, no terrorist act yet. That doesn't mean it won't happen, and it does not mean that they also will not keep these embassies closed for an indeterminate period of time. And speaking of time, we've already burned through that first segment. When we come back, we're going to talk about, a few other things that happened this past week. Right, Nostradamus?
We'll predict the past. Yes, we will.
Absolutely. So don't go away, folks. We are the American Adversaries. We'll be right back. Okay, folks. Crazy Mama. Crazy Mama.
23 minutes past the hour here on NPR.
You got the voice for that.
Before
we move on, just a quick note. We're doing a bit of a tribute tonight. Not a bit of a tribute. We are doing a tribute to J.J. Cale. John Waylon Cale died Friday, July 26th, at the age of 74 of a heart attack. J.J. Cale was from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and wrote a lot of songs. Many of them you probably heard, and a lot of them you might have heard other artists do. He was most famous for After Midnight, which Eric Clapton made real famous for him and made a lot of money for him. Call Me the Breeze by Lynyrd Skynyrd made a lot of money for him as well. Crazy Mama was his biggest hit. And he's a great songwriter, very greatly respected amongst his peers. Eric Clapton, in his autobiography, actually called J.J. Cale one of the most, and I quote now, one of the most important artists in the history of rock, quietly representing the greatest asset his country has ever had. He's saying that rock and roll is the greatest asset the United States has ever had. Well, I'll take that. But nonetheless, he credits J.J. Cale with being one of the greatest. So we're going to be playing.
I think I'd put Ronald Reagan up above that myself.
Reagan and rock and roll.
Well, yeah. Wow. Rock and roll, J.J. Cale, go together. So we're going to be playing J.J. Cale music as our bumps tonight. And then as we go off air, we're going to play a little song for you called Magnolia. It's one of my favorite J.J. Cale tunes you've probably never heard. So I hope you like it. And now let's get on to Nostradamus. Who predicts?
Nostradamus.
Mm-hmm.
Predicts.
Yes.
The past.
Yes. Yes! Nostradamus predicts the past. And let me open up this segment with a presentation. As you know, a few weeks ago, we gave out creepy-ass crackers to everybody in the studio except for Carl Jackson. Today, Carl gets the present. It's a pack of Orbitz gum. And, Carl, you know what you did.
Dirty mouth.
No need to explain. No need at all. Okay, let me move on.
All right.
I have in my hand a handful of gay stories.
Hold on a second.
What's that?
I owe all you guys an apology.
Well, what?
Larry, you do too. We never introduced the rest
of
the cast
tonight. Yeah, no, you never did, but that's all right. We're used to that.
Nobody cares.
We're used to that.
Nobody cares. They care about me.
You know, it's all about me. Introduce the cast on Sunday Night Show.
Our executive producer.
Hello. Hello.
Johnny Guns, our WTF news hound.
Why is it that you decided to introduce the rest of the cast after he mentioned a whole bunch of gay stuff?
Hey, speaking of which.
I don't know where you're coming out with that. Tyler Israel, our intern.
You don't want to talk to him. I'm happy to be here.
Of course, Carl Jackson's with us tonight.
Hello, everyone.
And
Jeff, he did his male, deep male voice. Hello, Jeff, everyone.
Yes. Hello, hello.
Oh, I'm macho male.
Jeff Sinis is pushing and pulling levers and twisting knobs there on the other side of the glass. Okay, Nostradamus.
Okay, speaking of twisting knobs, all right, let's see. First story is from the UK. A government bill in Parliament recently legalized gay marriage in Great Britain. Did you know this? But it included measures to protect churches from being forced to perform same-sex weddings if they didn't want to. This is not enough for Barry Druitt Barlow. He is a wealthy gay dad in the UK, and he and his civil partner, Tony, are still not getting what they want. Mr. Druitt Barlow says, "It's a shame we're forced to take Christians into court to get them to recognize us. It upsets me because I want it so much. A big, lavish ceremony, the whole works." I'm quoting this next line. "I just don't think it is going to happen straight away."
They're suing the church because they won't allow the ceremony.
Well, he sounds like a bride, doesn't he?
I want what I want!
Well, the queen signed.
That's right. Bridezilla.
Yeah. The queen signed off on it, so oh well.
Which one?
Gay marriage.
Yeah. Oh. Meanwhile, last week, Minneapolis, that's the state that brought us Al Franken and Jesse the Mind Ventura, decked the halls out for midnight marriages. 42 couples got married at City Hall in a mass ceremony starting at the stroke of midnight. Well, not actually a mass ceremony. It was kind of like lining up the DMV. They got married two at a time. And in fact, the mayor, R.T. Ryback, says it was really important to him that they don't feel like it's a conveyor belt of love, or as some might say, a sausage factory. So they want to take extra care to make sure they recognize the personal parts of all of them and know that they are loved too. I would guess that the phrase, "you may now kiss the bride," is not part of this ceremony.
Yeah, what is the expression now?
I don't know.
There is something going on also in Minnesota that gay couples are going to have to consider. Gay couples, not all of them want to get married.
Right, that's right.
You know, it's a fairly small percentage that say they actually want to get married. Unfortunately, the other ones now may lose the benefits that they now enjoy.
Bingo.
Because of same-sex couples were allowed to have, like, you know, same, you know, insurance and sure. benefits and this and that and the other thing. They may now lose that privilege because of the right for gay couples to marry.
Because cohabiting heterosexuals don't have that right. Exactly. And to give them that right, well, that would be a little ridiculous.
I love it. That's fairness.
In San Bernardino, California.
Be careful what you wish for.
That's right. Last week in San Bernardino, which is in the slowly going bankrupt state of California, we're all ready for a mass gay wedding ceremony. Nobody showed up last Saturday. They paid the preacher and sent him home. And a quote from the Empire Pride Center's director, P.J. Seleska, says, well, it's so expensive to get married out there. Marriage licenses cost $88 in San Bernardino County.
Oh, gosh.
That's not what they were talking about. Like, believe you me, they're beginning now to understand.
Is this one of those times when gay doesn't mean happy?
No.
And finally,
a
story that has nothing to do with being gay. This has to do with
It's like, why gays now, they get to know well, never mind, go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot they hadn't thought of.
I was going to say exactly.
Careful what you wish for, right?
Let's just leave it at that.
And lastly, my favorite sheriff, I love Don Esslinger. I also like the guy from Polk County. What's his name? But anyway, my favorite sheriff of all is Sheriff Joe Arpaio from Maricopa. Mm-hmm. I love Grady Judd. Maricopa County, Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio celebrated the 20th anniversary celebration of the 10th City Jail this past week. Did you hear about that?
20 years?
20 years he's had those tents out there.
Wow. And,
amid a lot of protests. Oh, why are you treating those prisoners? It's 110 degrees out there. Well, he did it with a movie, trying to do a little drive-in movie thing for them. And they put up a big screen. They had a vote. They decided what they were going to do. Picked what they thought would be the best movie to show them.
Shawshank Redemption?
That'd be a great one. No.
Oh. I was going to say The Longest Yard.
No, but they picked what I think is a real annoying movie.
What?
Bridesmaids?
Oh, boy.
Huh? Would that be an awful movie to subject prisoners with? In second place in the voting was My Cousin Vinny.
Oh, I love that movie.
That's a cute movie. It was just on yesterday, too.
I kind of show into that.
Saturday?
Yeah. Yeah, saw it there on the cable TV.
Two Utes.
What's a
Ute? Utes. That's right.
So that is Nostradamus predicting the past.
Okay. All right, once again, tonight's show is a tribute to J.J. Cale, the great rock and roll artist and songwriter who passed away July 26th. All right, folks, you are listening to The American Adversaries. When we come back, it's going to be Carl Jackson and Carl's Corner. Woo-hoo! I don't know what he's going to say, but I'm sure I'm going to like hearing it.
All right.
Don't go away, folks. And remember,
we are live.
Coming right back.
Hello. Ain't had my medicine.
That's right, folks. We are the American Adversaries. Our special to Mr. Cale. That's right, a great musician. I'm Larry Adams here with my co-host Christopher Hart. We have a studio full of people. Carl Jackson. We have Nostradamus. We have Johnny Guns. We have Tyler Israel. We have Jeff Sinas behind the glass. And a special guest coming up in the next segment. However, right now we have it's time for Carl's Corner. Before I go to Carl, let me give you that phone number, 407-774-8255, 774-8255. We have some callers on now. Callers, if you hold for a minute, I'm going to go to our good buddy, Carl Jackson.
All right. Hello, everyone.
That was dramatic, wasn't it?
Carl tonight? Yeah, it Jackson. Was. That was good. I appreciate that. Tonight, we're going to talk about minimum wage, the minimum wage, and we're going to talk about what it's really about. And why, actually, I'm going to help you argue against the minimum wage and why it's not beneficial. And actually, I'll tell you what it's about, and then I'll get to the nitty-gritty. I'll get to the details. Minimum wage, for those of you that don't know, is not about the minimum wage. It's not about helping the poor, as liberals like to argue. It's actually about crony unionism. That's the end game. That's why we've had the arguments in 96, 2006, and that's why the liberal Democrats are trying to stir up trouble again. But see if this sounds familiar. There's an enduring urban legend about minimum wage workers And that legend is that they are married adults struggling to raise children in a Dickensian-style poverty. This article is actually from the Heritage Foundation, and you can find it yourselves. It's called Minimum Wage Hike Would Hurt Low-Wage Workers. Okay, so minimum wage, this is according to liberal Democrats. This is a quote from one in particular that I won't name, but I'll let you guess who that person is later. Minimum wage workers are forced to make impossible choices between paying the rent and buying groceries, paying the heating bills or buying clothes. Their families, he said, lack health care and adequate housing. Their daily fear, this is minimum wage workers, their daily fear is poverty, hunger, and homelessness. Okay? Now, here's the truth. The data, however, tell a very different story. While some minimum wage workers are primary breadwinners, raising young children, the overwhelming majority are either young workers that are in entry-level positions, their first job, or they have part-time positions. And they're mostly female workers, believe it or not, from middle-class homes supplementing their spouse's income. So this whole nonsense that we have this huge amount of minimum wage workers, they're homeless, it's just absolute nonsense. So here's some more stats that you need to know. Only 1.9 million American workers out of a total workforce of 127.4 million earn minimum wage. For those of you that have studied these numbers and have heard these numbers that I'm mentioning before, you'll know that this is a very old argument because the numbers are extremely off. But I'm reading these stats on purpose. Most, 63%, are women. More than half are between the ages of 16 and 24, and even a larger percentage, 58% of the workers are part-time. So keep in mind, approximately 128 million in the workforce, only 1.9 million of those people are minimum wage earners. And most of them are women that are supplementing their household income and their youths, or utes, as they're called on My Cousin Vinny. Upward mobility, the norm. Two out of three of today's minimum wage workers will earn 10% more within a year. So there goes the argument for minimum wage. As you know, up in places like New York, they're demanding $15 an hour right now for minimum wage for flipping burgers. Pretty astonishing. Also, you should know this stat. Many are teenagers who live with their parents in middle-class homes. This explains why the average household income for minimum wage earners is more than $40,000 a year, and why only 19%, or about 400,000 nationwide, fall below the poverty line. This all is a joke. This is a scam. As a matter of fact, I want you to understand something else. I want you to hear something else. Let's consider the poverty line. Let's make up a number. Let's say 13,000. Okay, with depending on what state you're in, let's use Massachusetts, which is used in this Heritage article. Some of the benefits, the total benefits, welfare benefits that people can get that have this poverty line, this minimum wage income, because it would be about 11 to 13,000 a year if you worked full time, minimum wage below the poverty line. However, the benefits that minimum wage workers are allowed to get, the help that they're already getting that they claim they don't get, can actually cost an additional $30,000. And upwards of $34,000 and $35,000 in states like Massachusetts. So I want to say two words to you so that you understand. Boston bombers. This is the type of income, minimum wage type income, living on welfare, that these guys were able to get. This whole nonsense, this whole idea that minimum wage workers are helpless, they're homeless, they're going hungry, it's absolutely not true. In fact, the evidence shows that the longer the person stays on a minimum wage and gets welfare benefits, like this senator who was making this claim that they're hungry and homeless, the whole argument is nonsense. They're more likely to stay in poverty longer.
Carl, let me ask you this. When did minimum wage
become a living wage?
Well, as soon as Democrats got involved, as a matter of fact. Because minimum wage is now a living wage because Democrats have realized as long as we can keep them on minimum wage, keep in mind, they're incentivized to stay in minimum wage jobs and collect welfare because for every $1,000 in benefits or every $1,000 of money they earn annually, they lose $3,000 worth of benefits.
But what it really demonstrates is their lack of knowledge about basic economics. I'll get to that in just a minute. But just to add to your argument, there was an article in Thursday's Wall Street Journal, August 1st, by Arthur Brooks, called How Obama Neglects the Poor. Reminded me of you, and you, you know, when we were talking about Obama's war on the middle class, sure. And you said his, what did you call it?
War to keep them poor.
War to keep them poor. And the way he does that is basically neglecting their needs. And we were citing some statistics the other day. This is more specific. In 2011, workers and households earning between $40,000 and $60,000 had a 7.8% unemployment rate. In households earning under $20,000, unemployment was 24.4%. Okay, because there's just so much that they can do other than have to go out and work. The unemployment for households earning more than $150,000, 3.2%. Yes, Mr. President, you have done quite well for everybody that you said you weren't going to do well for, and you have done quite poorly for the people that you said you were going to do well for.
We've talked in the past about the Pennsylvania state, he was the Secretary of State, put out a study a year or two ago that said that a family there earning $28,000 with all the extra benefits they would get is doing better than a family making $62,000.
Exactly.
Why bother doing better?
Exactly. Well, this is the point. And this is designed to go this way. And let me tell you why. What was the date of that article that you read, Chris?
This is from Thursday.
Okay. This is from 1996. These are the same arguments.
And let me just to cap that off. He says here, again and again, the president offers a higher minimum wage as a solution to these poor folks. Yet, as the overwhelming majority of economists have argued for decades, thank you, Carl Jackson, the minimum wage actually harms the poorest and most marginalized workers, those with most tenuous grip on their jobs. In January of this year, a study from the National Bureau of Economic Research surveyed the most recent studies and concluded the evidence still, and always has, shows that minimum wage poses a trade-off of higher wages for some against job losses for others. You see, what they don't seem to understand is this is all relative. If you raise the minimum wage, everybody else's is going to go up in conjunction with that. That's why the unions like a minimum wage.
Thank you. Because their
contracts are
based on
that.
Exactly.
Which means we're all going to suffer what we suffered in the 60s and 70s, which was labor cost-related inflation. You remember inflation, 16-17%? That's because contracts across this country for labor unions were going up by that rate. So the cost of living went up by that rate. So yeah, go ahead and jack up. You name whatever minimum wage you want it to be. You want it to be $100 an hour? Make it $100 an hour. All you're doing is guaranteeing that $100 is worth $10 in today's money, or less.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, Chris, I mean, even with just the $15 an hour wage at McDonald's, now you're going to be paying $12 for a meal.
That's the point.
Somebody's got to pay for it.
That's the point. It hurts everybody because it causes inflation. It hurts particularly the people who just come into the job market, the young, the people who are looking to supplement an income. Those people are the ones who get burned.
It hurts everyone except the Democrat politician who needs crony unionism. Yeah. Crony unionism, as well as the vote from those seeking to stay on welfare, exactly where they want them. They want to keep them in their place. They want to keep you poor. That's the goal of the Democrat Party. If you're poor, if you depend on them, their party cannot survive. That's the goal.
The Democrats need the poor dependent so that they will vote for them. And that's why they try to increase the ranks of the poor by driving the middle class to the poor. So Carl's absolutely right. There's a war by the Democrats to keep the poor poor because they vote for them. And then there's a war amongst the Democrats against the middle class to make you poor so that you will then be subject to vote for them, a subject to vote for them as well. Okay, I want to take one phone call real fast, and we're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to have Scott Plake and Tom Tillison join us to talk about the Sanford Declaration, which I'm kind of excited about. But, Rick, thanks for calling. We appreciate
hey,
you being out there. How you doing tonight?
Overworked, underpaid, and unappreciated.
Okay, you got
but well fed.
You got 1 minute. Go ahead.
Okay, real quick on the minimum wage. They want to raise the minimum wage so they can get the Occupy Wall Street people out of their basements and into their own place. But besides that, marriage is like a cheeseburger. You need one patty of meat and one slice of cheese. So if you want to have gay marriage, you're going to have two patties of meat. Is that a cheeseburger? No. Or you have two patties of cheese. Is that a cheeseburger? No. That's a grilled cheese sandwich. Marriage is one patty of meat and one slice of cheese.
So you're
no matter how you cut it.
Yeah. One man, one woman.
That would make my lunch today an orgy.
Oh, God.
What about the McDonald's?
Okay. Thank you. Thanks. All right. Thank you, Rick. We appreciate that analogy. One man, one woman for Rick. Okay.
I never thought of a hamburger as a sex toy. Folks, we are the American Adversaries.
Hope you never do again.
And we'll be back with our special guest.
And here comes the email. What?
Okay, folks, welcome back. That's right. You are listening to the American Adversaries Tribute to J.J. Cale. We are live here in the Altamont Springs studio. 407-774-8255 is the number. We now are going to go. Oh, okay. Real quick, folks, we are now back up on 660 AM. And if you've been listening to us on 1520 WBZW, where we simulcast on Sunday nights, you can now, if you like, so choose, go back to 660 AM. And if you've been listening to the Rays postgame show on 660 AM, welcome to the American Adversaries. We are live here every Sunday from 5 to 8 PM. If you've never listened to our show before, I hope you'll listen tonight. And, by the way, if you are a Rays fan, and I know you are, if you are listening to their postgame show, we give away tickets here on every Wednesday when we're during the season here, at least for a while now. We're giving away tickets to the Rays baseball games free. Okay. Welcome to the show. Right now, we're going to be talking with Scott Plakon and Tom Tillison about something that's been going on, I guess, about a year or so. I'll let Scott fill us in more on the details up in Sanford as a result of Trayvon Martin's death. And it's something that's called the Sanford Declaration. But before we go on any further, I want to welcome you, Scott Plakon, to our show. Thanks for coming in tonight.
And thanks for having me on today.
We appreciate you coming down to the studio as well. And we also have Tom Tillison on the line. Tom Tillison, you're regularly our Friday man, but you're joining us on a Sunday night. We want to thank you for that.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be here, guys.
Okay. Tom, since you turned us on to this, I'm going to let you start. Now, you wrote an article, I believe, for BizPack Review Friday having to do with the Sanford Declaration. Am I right on that?
Yeah, that's correct. Scott Plakon sort of took me off on the story. Yeah, he's a board member of the Christian Life Missions, and he's actually involved in the whole process. The one thing about a lot of elected officials, we don't always give them their full credit. And Scott is he's a man of the community. He's involved in a lot of things, and things like this, he typically is low key about. And which, he shows you, he's not doing this, to build himself up in the community as a politician. He's doing it out of, genuine concern for the community. But anyway, the effort, has been a long time coming. That this group of pastors and Christian leaders, got together, over a year ago, right after the shooting of Trayvon Martin, this is folks right there in the very community where this tragedy took place, and they, much to in contrast to what we see from what is now called the grievance industry, folks like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, these guys have sat down, black and white, to say, how can we make things better? How can we, improve things, between the race and between races? And one of the things that they came up with was called the Stanford Declaration. But again, Scott Plagan was, intimately involved in this, and I think, he would be much better in a much better position to give you the details on that.
And I'm going to ask him those questions here in just a second. Is that the gist of your article, which you basically just explained?
More or less, it is. Again, just pointing out that that these guys have drafted this Stanford Declaration. The whole purpose behind the article is, again, even though this is mostly local folks, that there were also some pastors there from Atlanta, from Los Angeles, and the goal is to make this a national effort, to roll it out nationally, to see some true improvement from this tragedy.
Okay, I want to go now to Scott Plagan. And, Scott, exactly what is the Stanford Declaration, and what does it say?
Well, as Tom said, about a year ago, a group of leaders, Christian leaders in Stanford, decided to get together and determine what their response to this tragedy would be, and they had a choice to make, and they decided to go along more with Matthew 5:9, blessed are the peacemakers, rather than the direction some other have taken this very sad situation. So over the last year, these group of leaders have intentionally went out to lunch together, mostly pastors, and tried to get to know and understand each other. And I think what was really visible to both our area and around the country is that a lot of people were expecting, after the verdict for Stanford, to break out in unrest like many of the other communities around the country. And I was watching the verdict, and I was sitting there next to my wife. I said, watch this. Stanford, it's going to be peace and quiet, which it was. And that is an intentional effort by a lot of these Christian leaders to have understanding and get to know each other. And we believe that that's what the Bible would call for. And obviously, others have taken different approach to this, and we think that this is the right one. And also,
let me just interject real quick, because I had a personal experience where I can testify that elsewhere in the country, they did not expect that response here in Central Florida. I had the privilege of being on a radio show in Los Angeles where they seemed to be taken aback by the fact that nothing was happening here, that I didn't have basically anything bad to report. They seem really shocked by that.
That's right. In fact, in our meeting Wednesday, for about 4 or 5 hours where the declaration was drafted, there was a pastor from Los Angeles there, one from Chicago, I believe one from Atlanta, and they're going to try to make this an example in their communities, how instead of divisive type language over something like this, to try to get blacks to know whites and vice versa, and try to understand where everybody's coming from. The Stanford Declaration is online available. It's several paragraphs long at sanforddeclaration.org. But there's a series of things that they're trying to get the word out. Like, for example, I had never thought of this until it came up in the meeting, pulpit exchanges between church families.
Sure.
I've been to black churches a number of times in my life, but what about a black church and a white church, so to speak, exchanging pastors?
Swapping ministers, sure.
Okay, and letting...
I would like to see it, even though I saw that. I'm going to be referencing an Orlando Sentinel article where they mentioned that. I would also like to see, how churches have church picnics? Why not have black and white churches come together in communal picnics? Not just, exchanging pastors, but exchanging greetings amongst themselves, if you will.
Well, number two is joint leadership and family retreats. So same concept.
Okay.
That was item number two on the list.
Yeah.
Is envisioning those kind of things. So, anything that will create better understanding and healing, in this type of environment, I think is good. And, I think that some good can come out of this. As we know in Romans 28, it says, and we know that for those that love God, all things work together for good, for those according to his purpose. So the idea would be, out of this very sad situation where this teenager lost his life, that's been so disruptive to so many people that something good can come of this, and we believe that it can.
Well, let me ask you this, Scott. Was there any effort made to try to contact these other, quote, religious leaders, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, by these local religious leaders?
Well, they were in the community, so, and some of these leaders have had contact with them, but I'm not aware of the individual contact, mm-hmm. but I know there was contact. But I think that this group of pastors was pretty much doing their own thing and trying to set a different kind of example. And hopefully, through their leadership, others will follow, including maybe some of the people you just...
Let me, Carl has a question. I'd like him to ask the question. You think about it, but we have to go to the break. But go ahead,
yeah,
Carl.
Let me ask you this. Are you seeing, or did you see with the black pastors involved, the willingness to admit that blacks can be racist too? Because I think that's a very important aspect that needs to be addressed.
Well, not directly that, but I could tell you that throughout this process, that it was not all... There was some give and take. Yeah, there was some give and take.
Okay, so we're going to be doing our own sort of give and take around here when we come back from this break. We're going to continue this very important conversation with Scott Plakin about the Sanford Declaration when we come back.
That's right, folks. And we're coming up for segment number two right after this.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Blair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Blair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Love that song by J.J. Cale. We're going to play that at the end of the show in its entirety. It's called Magnolia.
That song may make a grown man cry, and he won't even know the reasons why.
To me, it's a soothing song. It's a healing song, and that's what we're talking about right now. Soothing and healing, which is what this country needs, what this community needs, which is what the Sanford Declaration is all about. I'm Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Carl Jackson, Johnny Guns, Tyler Israel, Jeff Sinis. We're welcoming Jeff Plakon into our studio tonight. We also have Tom Tillison on the line. Welcome back. I'm sorry. Welcome back to the show, guys. Scott, did I say Tom? Did I mispronounce your name?
Said Jeff.
At least he said the last name.
Okay.
Right? That's actually a rarity.
Jeff Sinis and Scott Plakon. Sorry, guys. All right. We got a full house. Let's just put it that way. I'm going to take a couple of minutes and read the Sanford Declaration. It's basically one page, and I think you folks need to hear it. And once again, you can go to what was that website that you mentioned?
SanfordDeclaration.org.
SanfordDeclaration.org. And I read now. In the aftermath of the George Zimmerman verdict and the need to address racism as a spiritual problem, a diverse group of Christian ministers and leaders drafted the following declaration in Sanford, Florida. Today, this group of ministers and leaders stands as representatives of the gospel of Jesus Christ and His church. We see racism as a threat to the body of Christ and our mission to make disciples of all nations, Matthew 28:19. The focus of our collective activities the next few years is to form relationships in order to end expressed racism within the church and society. By doing so, we will lead the way for the rest of our nation to rise above the crippling specter of racism in our culture. Our scripture guidelines for these activities comes from the Apostle Paul's words in Ephesians 4:15, read as follows. And I quote, "Speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into him who is the head, that is Christ. We believe that God has gifted us and millions yet to be called to minister for him in this regard. We believe that God works in the lives of chosen men and women. Further, we believe that the Lord uses his appointed leaders to transform history. We believe that the key to ending racism in the United States and in other nations lies in the Christians developing and promoting genuine relationships among each other, just as it is being done in Sanford, Florida since the spring of 2012. As a result, Sanford did not experience the rioting, looting, and violence that other regions did after the July 2013 George Zimmerman not guilty verdict. Additionally, Christians should develop intentional relationships that will result from living life together," quoted, "thereby manifesting in some of the following. 1. Pulpit exchanges between church families. 2. Joint leadership and family retreats. 3. Cross-cultural evangelism of other races. 4. Multiracial church planting and development. 5. Cross-cultural home mission projects in the local metropolitan areas to assist in A. lifting families out of generational poverty. B. motivating at-risk black, white, Asian, and Hispanic youth, especially males, in developing a sense of personal respect, destiny, and worthwhile goals. C. developing minority university scholarship programs and entrepreneurial opportunities. 6. Other creative local programs that will be developed locally. 7. Lay a foundation for change with prayer and intercession. Leaders in attendance, next steps. We call on Christians around the country to meet and develop a statement for your own communities. We also encourage both clergy and individual Christians to sign the Sanford Declaration, a covenant of racial reconciliation, relationship, and Christian cultural reformation." Sounds pretty good. Has there been vocal critics of this in the local community?
Well, no, not at all. This is just this past Wednesday was the meeting over in Lake Marion.
Now, you were
Thursday,
there.
I was there, yeah. And there was, in drafting this, there was discussion of most of the words in it to try to get it just right to express the sentiments of the Christian leaders that were in the room. And there were dozens of pastors and other Christian leaders there that all worked on this to put it together.
Did you get the feeling that these pastors are sincere in wanting to take this to the next level?
Absolutely. I believe a number of them feel uniquely called by the situation that happened to demonstrate the gospel of Jesus Christ to the nation from their response to what happened in Sanford. Think about it. If cities like Los Angeles, Chicago, Atlanta, some of the ones that were represented there, when they have incidents in their own community, would, instead of, in some cases, people using it to be divisive, to pull together and use it to create greater understanding as believers, we'd have a much better country, I can tell you that.
You know what I like about this in general, and I'd like to get your response to this, is the fact that the church is going out and doing something about it rather than the government. I love to see pastors saying, hey, we have solutions here, whether it be racism, and I'm sure, and I'm hoping this will open the door to other issues within the black and white and Hispanic communities in the future. But I like the fact that pastors got together and said, it's not necessarily a piece of legislation we need to pass. We need to start coming together as a church body. And so I'd like to hear your response to that.
Well, that's right. And you mentioned legislation. I served in the state legislature for 4 years, and you can't make enough laws to compensate for what's in people's hearts. So this is Christian leaders in the Sanford area taking leadership in trying to expose people's hearts and understand what's in many of our hearts and to move that forward throughout the country. And as we talked about off the air, I'll cut right to the chase. Racism is a sin. And yes, I use the sin word. I know some people don't like that, but it is a sin of the worst kind. God made some black, some white, some Hispanic and others, and he made us that way. So for us to discriminate against each other like sure. that is really an affront to God himself. So I think these pastors are trying to take something good out of that situation, very sad situation, and use it as an example and a light to the rest of the country.
Scott, let me ask this. You know, Lair referenced Sharpton and Jackson and their particular brand of, let's just say, organizing people. What they do is they keep the sins of past racism alive, if you will. You called racism a sin. They keep the sins of past racism alive in order to keep their, in my crass view of things, their career alive. And as long as they can capitalize on that bitterness from past events, I mean, oftentimes when you hear people, black people in particular, talking about racism, they're talking about past events. Slavery, obviously, is one. As long as that bitterness and resentment and hatred are kept alive, it's difficult for me to see how we can go much beyond making declarations. But a couple of weeks ago on this show, immediately following the verdict, I was thinking about this, and a friend of mine kept coming to my mind. And my guys, they all know who I'm talking about probably already. A friend of mine who lost a son of his to a hit-and-run driver, a fellow who was evidently drunk that night. We know he left a bar very late after drinking. Of course, he was hit-and-run driver, so they couldn't take a blood test. When it came time for sentencing, and my friend was allowed to stand and speak before the court about his son and about what he thought would be an appropriate sentence, he simply looked at the fella, and he said, "I forgive you." Now, the man himself collapsed in tears. I don't know whatever happened to that man. Perhaps he made something of his life. Perhaps he did not. But I do know this from my friend's perspective. He does not live with resentment. He does not live with bitterness. He does not live with hatred. What I am asking here is that the next time that you meet with these folks, if you could take this message back, the power of forgiveness is unlimited. And if we start right here in Central Florida and these pastors get together and publicly, before television cameras, go out and declare forgiveness, both ways, all ways, however you want to do it. Because forgiveness is for those who do the forgiving more so than those who are doing the forgiving or getting forgiven. So if the black community is living with this resentment and bitterness, they need to forgive and in a public fashion. And I'm here to say, God wants us to test him. He wants us to put this out there. And as you say, Sanford is already showing the world something that nobody expected to happen. And if we could show them the power of forgiveness, I am convinced that that would move the ball forward in an unlimited fashion. Your thoughts? I know you're a Christian man. What do you think about that?
Well, the first thing I have to say about that is amen to everything you just said. And the example of forgiveness that you just said, I think that this is an effort by those, the people that were there, the pastors and the people of Sanford and the Christian leaders to take that message bigger than just our community. But what you just described is not a human thing to do. That is a divine thing to do. That comes from God. The ability to take someone to take somebody that has hurt you so badly in the worst kind of way, and through Christ in your heart to say, "I forgive you." Those are not, as human beings, those are not easy words to say. But with God, you can say them, you can mean them, and you can go in peace. So the same kind of thing with this. There's a lot of very strong feelings. Some of which, you know, from both sides, they're hard to understand. It's hard, you know, I haven't grown up black in America, so it's hard to understand that, and vice versa. So,
but see, that's the whole point here, and I don't mean to take issue with you, and I'm not. But that's why I'm saying that's where the power of forgiveness comes in. You don't have to understand. You don't have to put yourself in that other person's shoes. Forgiveness takes care of that. And then once we are forgiven with each other, we start anew. It is a way to truly heal and start afresh. And that's why we are given forgiveness, you know, by Jesus Christ. It is to allow us to start afresh, anew. Whatever came before doesn't matter anymore. That's the whole point. Carl Jackson.
I absolutely agree with everything you said.
Okay. All right, we're coming up on a break. When we come back, I want to bring Tom Tillison back in on this, and we also have a caller who would like to make a comment about the Sanford Declaration, and we invite you, too, to join in at 407-774-8255. We're the American Adversaries, and don't forget, folks, we are
live.
Coming right back.
River runs deep and the water's cold as ice. I go down there, never chance again. That's what my baby seen there today. And the river runs deep.
That's right, folks. We are the American Adversaries, our special Sunday night edition on from 5 till 8 o'clock. So we're right in the heart of our show, actually. I am Larry Adams here with Christopher Hart. And on the line right now, we want to pull Tom Tillison in on the discussion here with Scott Plankon. Tom, a question for Scott?
Well, it's not necessarily a question, but I just wanted to say that, you know, that this effort that we're talking about here is something that what I've seen thus far in the last few days, the media is not going out of their way to embrace it. There's no doubt in this country we struggle to move past the pain of racism. There's no denying that. And I think the opportunity of having the churches get involved is probably as good a place to start trying to do that, because it's the one place where most of us will at least lower our guard, when we're at church and we're willing to, to accept things be open and receptive to things that we may not otherwise be. So I think this is a great initiative, but the real challenge is taking it beyond, these few local individuals and spreading this, in the community. And it takes, everybody, individuals, doing this, on a one-on-one basis and getting their churches involved and having, if you go to a white church, talk to your pastor about an outreach, program to minority churches, or if you go to a minority church, the vice versa. But I think it's up to the individual people, to really make this happen. And I would ask Scott, what are the plans long term is trying to roll this out, in the community at large?
Well, in the community Sanford, it's organically happening with these pastors and around Seminole County. And as I referenced before, there's several that were there from different parts of the country. Additionally, I'm on the board of Christian Light Missions. Our chairman is Stephen Strang, who's locally, who's nationally known media figure in Christian circles, who's for decades been helping to bring blacks and whites together through Charisma and Christian Life magazine and some of their other media. So they're going to make a real effort on getting word out about this around the country as well.
Let me just follow up to Tom's question there. You're a politician. He mentioned the church as being a place to start. Aren't the churches actually the best place to start this? Isn't this really where the seeds to make this type thing work, grow?
Well, absolutely, because this is going to require not law changes, but heart changes here. And that's where the church can really help out here.
And that's where forgiveness comes in.
Forgiveness happens. That's
Tom, right. Nostradamus here. And you know where I first heard in the media about this Sanford Declaration? On bizpacreview.com. And I heard it second about a half an hour ago on the American Adversaries. The mainstream media is not going to touch this story because this doesn't fit the storyline.
In all fairness, it was on the front page, bottom left corner of Thursday's Orlando Sentinel.
I didn't get Thursday's paper.
They did report on the meeting and the general gist. They didn't do too bad of an article. However, it could have been much more prominently placed on the front page. And I suspect, being that it is Christian-oriented, that it is not looked totally favorably upon by the, let's just say, the elite media.
And in general, if two churches come out, a black church and a white church, and have a great picnic, that's not a story. Black shoots white shoots black. That's a story. That's something the media gets their teeth into.
And do these pastors understand that? Do they understand that the media is not necessarily going to see this as interesting news?
Well, nobody's under the illusion that any of this is going to be easy and just this is going to change these problems that have come over decades. But I think that by, you know, them taking leadership and getting this out, and there was a press conference the other day, at least a couple of the local news stations carried pieces on it. Yeah. Channel 13 was there, mm-hmm. and one of the other broadcast stations. But it's going to take sort of a grassroots of believers and pastors sort of buying into this, and hopefully we can get as many as possible to sign on to the Sanford Declaration. And as these pastors go out from this meeting into some of these other cities, and with what Mr. Strang, I know, is going to be doing, hopefully we can get word out. But I think you're right that the media itself, this is, they kind of thrive in a lot of ways on division and divisiveness versus bringing peace and healing. So I don't think we can count on them in getting word out on this.
And at the risk of being redundant, that's where I think a forgiveness campaign would be effective. It would be hard for them to ignore that. That, I do believe, would be newsworthy, in particular if you had both black and white pastors coming together and members of other clergy as well, all comers. If they want to participate in this, they're welcome. But the declaration spells out your guidelines, so to speak. You mentioned there's a video on the website. What's the website again, and what's the video about?
Well, last year at the first meeting, Christian Life Missions produced a 20-minute video called Sanford, The Untold Story. They had an unveiling in Sanford last year that my wife and I went to. And it's a lot of these Christian leaders expressing their sentiments about this. And you can see kind of live interaction of their discussion, both from the black and white pastors, and even expressing some of their feelings about things that have happened to them and so on and so forth. And it's a video really about healing and about what's happening. And it's really a miracle what's happening there in Sanford. And it didn't just start with the verdict. It started about a year ago after the shooting. So, it's been very, very, and I got to tell you, in talking to some of the pastors that were there, it was really interesting seeing they've, over the last year, getting to know each other and really becoming friends. And it says living life together in the declaration. That actually, in the meeting in the room, it was doing life together is what we said, but it was decided to put living life together. But it's really, that's what it's about, is doing life together.
I have a quick question, and Carl, I think, has a question for you. Whose idea was this? Who started this?
Well, it started with, I believe, Stephen Strang, who, like I said earlier, has for decades really, focused on bringing, blacks and whites mainly together. If you look at the publications, that they produce. It's distributed to lots and lots of Christians around the country, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them. And even looking at the ads and so on, it's black churches, white churches. He's published books for T.D. Jakes to John Hagee and everywhere in between. So it was him spearheading. Their office is about 2 miles from where the event happened. And he's also, like I said, I'm on the board of Christian Life Missions. So we've taken this as an initiative, doing some of the operational background work for it. We're not, you know, the pastors and Christian leaders that are doing this are kind of front and center. We've mainly been helping out, like producing the video and those kind of things.
Okay. Listen, we have a caller on the line, but we've got a hard break. When we come back, could you stay for a couple of minutes?
Sure.
Okay, after the break. When we come back, we're going to take Don's call. I know Carl has a question, and we'll sort of wrap things up with Scott Placon. But Scott, I want you to know you're welcome back anytime to talk about this subject, and I'd love you to put us in contact with some of these pastors. I'd love to have them on the show as well.
That's right, folks. We are the American Adversaries with our special tribute to J.J. Cale. I'm Larry Adams here with my co-host Christopher Hart, who's going to take us now into the realm of Who Said That?
That's right, folks. It's time for our Who Said That contest. You know how to play this. We read a quote. You simply call us at 407-774-8255 and tell us who said it, and you'll win a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano, who sponsors this portion of our show, the finest Italian restaurant all Central Florida. We were there this past Wednesday. I want to thank Tim and Rick for coming and having dinner with us, and you can have dinner with us there too, folks. 407-774-8080 is their number. But if you know who said this right here, give us a call on our line, which is 407-774-8255. Oh, by the way, you'll also get an American Adversaries t-shirt. Who said this right here? And I quote, and I think this is appropriate for what we're discussing here. Who said, "The American, by nature, is optimistic. He is experimental, an inventor, and a builder who builds best when called upon to build greatly." Who said that? I'll read it again. "The American, by nature, is optimistic. He is experimental, an inventor, and a builder who builds best when called upon to build greatly." And that's what we're calling upon the Sanford community here with this declaration, and that is to build something greatly. And I think that they're taking the right approach with the pastors getting together and making this happen, if you will, at the very grassroots level. I want to go to Don, who's been holding, and then we'll go back to Tom for one last comment from him. Don, thank you for holding, and we appreciate your call tonight.
Thank you very much, and like you, Chris, I feel that there's a word missing from the Sanford Declaration that I would like to see added, probably in the same paragraph with your word forgiveness, and I hope that in the future that you'll consider adding this word to your crusade to get people to come to forgiveness. And I believe that this is a word that forgiveness will outflow from this word. I believe racial reconciliation will outflow from this word. I believe the end of government corruption and overreaching will not come until this word is enacted. And it's got to begin in God's people, and it's got to begin in the church. And if we don't start
the word,
pressing,
with the word,
the
Don,
word is revival.
Okay.
If we don't get a revival going, and if it doesn't start from the pulpits, calling on the people in the pews to get down on their knees and pray for revival, if we don't get a revival going in this country, then we don't have a chance.
Don, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate that. And I guess between Don and I guess it's which came first, the chicken or the egg. I would say forgiveness brings about revival. Scott, I see you want to say something.
That's exactly right. It has a start with forgiveness and healing. And out of, if you look at revivals in the past, it's leaders calling on other people to repent. And that's really what this is people repenting of things that they hold within their heart.
Thank you.
So, you know, I don't want to over-dramatize that this is the beginning of that, but it could be.
No,
and if this could happen in different communities, certainly it's a good step.
It's an excellent point, and actually it's so funny because I felt like it's in that order. It's actually repentance, and then out of repentance comes forgiveness, and out of forgiveness will come revival. But I do want to say this because I'm one of these optimists when it comes to God. I do believe, despite the fact that I don't think the media is going to give the coverage or whatever, but I'm a guy that believes that God is bigger than media. And I think Sanford proved that. When you see, the nation in certain cities rioting, you know, LA and so on, et cetera, rioting, you don't see it here. It's obvious that God's hand was already on this. So I'm a guy that believes even the church is bigger than the media. However, I'm also a guy that loves spiritual principles with practical implication. So I would have to second Chris's notion to name this thing the forgiveness campaign and literally make it a tour. Because I think then media helps. But I do think it needs to be something like the forgiveness campaign or the forgiveness tour.
See, I think
to make it happen.
I think what would happen is people would see what I saw in my friend Tom, who lost his son. They will see the effects. God's power will be seen. God is saying, "Let me show my people, and let me make you the example, Sanford, Florida." And so I think this, don't let me over-dramatize it, but I think this could be the start of something tremendously great. Because God wants to be tested. God wants to be able to show God's power. All we need to do is give him the opportunity. And I believe with the forgiveness campaign, in conjunction with the Sanford Declaration, is the way to do that. And the media, they can ignore it all they want, but God will get their attention.
That's right. And if you look at what happened in Sanford, trying to look at it on a completely rational basis, that would have been the place where you would have expected
sure.
this type of unrest to happen.
Yep.
The only explanation that I can think of why it didn't is these relationships that were built. So we have right here a clear example that the rest of the nation can look at. This is what can happen in the natural. This is actual people, pastors with names and churches and leaders, that they did this with intentionality. It's not going to happen by accident. This is something that we have now, I think, an example of what can be in all the rest of these cities.
And meanwhile, while they were doing that, you notice who didn't come back to the Sanford area?
Big Perm.
Okay, let's go to Tom
Stayed
Tillison.
Away.
Tom Tillison, I'll give you the final question for Scott Placon for tonight.
Big Perm is Al thanks. Sharpton, by the way.
That's right, and or Jesse Jackson. And thanks, Tom, for being patient and holding on your phone for us. But go ahead with the last question for Scott.
Okay, sure. You know, this whole thing, is, you know, we've saw a lot of effort put into, you know, trying to politicize what has happened here. You know, this is an opportunity to really, you know, with all this political, you know, implications that are being brought in, you know, it's created a lot of divisiveness in the country. You know, this is an opportunity to honestly make something positive out of, what has happened, you know, within the death of Trayvon Martin. It might be the only opportunity to create something positive, but I'm just curious, Scott, I mean, is there any effort to turn to the, you know, the elected officials in the state of Florida, both Democrat and Republican, and to in any way, you know, have them participate in this or in any way recognize it or acknowledge it?
Or would that maybe spoil it?
Well, if you looked at the Sanford Declaration, late last week, I spoke to Representative Jason Broder here locally, and he signed on. And this week, I know a lot of the people in the legislature. I plan on sending some text messages, and I'm sure a number of them would sign on to this because, you know, this is the right thing to do. And I think that despite a lot of different things that are going on in the state, this is something that's obvious to bring people together. You have a choice here. We can either all look at this situation that happened, look for an opportunity to bring people together or divide them. Now, they're dealing with right now also on a more practical level that there's for the Stand Your Ground law. There's people have been picketing at the Capitol for the last couple of weeks,
right.
Trying to get a special session done. So a number of them have put out statements about the very unfortunate comments of Reverend Jackson that was at the Florida Capitol this week about
right.
our state being apartheid
yeah.
and comparing it to Selma. And the governor put out a very strong statement.
Thanks.
And that is not going to be helpful to the people of Florida. And I think most people, Christian or other, are going to be offended by those type of statements.
And that's why this and the forgiveness campaign would be in juxtaposition to that. This would be the polemic opposite of that. And people would see that this is the way to go, not follow those characters anymore. Their day has come and gone, that this is the way of the future.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think most people looking at this, if they compare the two approaches, let's use what, you know, Jesse Jackson has been doing or Al Sharpton recently,
yeah.
Or this group of pastors right at sort of ground zero where all this happened, coming together in prayer and reconciliation. Like I said before, this is not, I know, from some of them been an easy process over the last year. There are some very deep hurts in some of the people
yes.
there, and I won't go into more detail than that, but by getting together in relationship, they've moved beyond that and were involved in crafting this statement.
I think it's a great thing, Scott Placon. I think it's great that you're involved in it. I look forward to having you back a lot on the show to talk about this and other subjects. And, by the way, good luck with your campaign.
Thanks, guys.
And, ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking to Scott Placon, and you can go to Sanford Declaration. Just spell that out, sanforddeclaration.org. And please sign on to this. If you believe in it, and I do, sign on to it, sanforddeclaration.org, and watch the video and stay up with this as we're going to try to do, too, because I think that this really could be something. You want to talk about a revival, Don? Maybe it starts right here. Let's get it done.
That's right, folks. We are the American Adversaries. Now, we have even more guests coming up. We have Ken Dwyer and Dan Peterson coming up next
and
on
Dan
board.
And Dan Finelli.
And Dan Finelli's back there, too. I thought you were hiding him for another segment. Now we'll have Dan on
we'll
here, too.
All in there.
I'd like to thank Tom Tillison for hanging on, too, folks. We'll be right back.
Okay, folks, it's easy around here for us to get fired up on Sunday nights, and we hope you're out there listening to us tonight. 407-774-8255 is the number. Christopher Hart and Lair Adams here in the studio with you, along with Carl Jackson. We've now done the, what do you call that, musical chairs bit?
The shuffle.
The shuffle. We've done the shuffle. Once again, want to thank Scott Placon for being on our show tonight. He definitely will be back to talk more about that subject, the Sanford Declaration. We have in the studio now with us and live, we have Ken Dwyer from the Orange County Republican Executive Committee. Once again, thanks for being back on our show, Ken.
Thank you.
And Dan Finelli, who's also with the Republican Committee and also ran for elections supervisor last time. I hope you'll do it again and win next time, Dan. Welcome back.
Thanks much. Great to be here.
And we also now have Dan Peterson with us tonight, and he's from the Coalition for Property Rights. Welcome back to the show once again, Dan.
Glad to be here, Christopher. Thanks.
Okay. Once again, folks, we haven't even had the first guess on our Who Said That contest tonight. I'm a little puzzling.
Read it again.
I will do that, and if you are the first guess and you don't get it right and nobody else gets it right, you will be declared the winner, because we want to give away...
By default.
That's right. We want to give away that $20 gift card and an American Adversaries T-shirt. Who said, the American, by nature, is optimistic? He is experimental, an inventor, and a builder who builds best when called upon to build greatly. I'll read it one more time. The American, by nature, is optimistic. He is experimental, an inventor, and a builder who builds best when called upon to build greatly. If you know who said that...
Carl Jackson, he said it.
What's that, Carl?
If you were talking about Muslims, I was going to say Barack Obama.
No. Okay, let's go to Myra, who thinks she knows who said it and wants to make a comment about the Sanford Declaration. Thanks, Myra, for calling tonight.
Yeah, two things. It's a real guess, but Teddy Roosevelt.
It was not Teddy Roosevelt, but I will say this. It was a president of the United States. Of the opposite party is Teddy Roosevelt.
Ooh. Okay.
But if nobody gets it, make sure you give your information to Jeff, because if nobody gets it, you will be declared the winner.
Okay.
And you also wanted to make a comment about the Sanford Declaration.
Yes. After the verdict came in and I put it into perspective, because I felt that they possibly would come down with a manslaughter verdict. If he had been convicted and sent off to prison, people would have said, okay, we got our pound of flesh. Everybody would have forgotten about it, and everybody would have moved on.
Right.
This way, with what happened and the not guilty verdict, the needs of young black men across this nation, from the East Coast to the West Coast, all of our inner cities, the unemployment rates, the issues with education, the issues with incarceration, all of this will keep everything front and center. How ironic that the NAACP was here for the very first time in its 104-year history, the same weekend that the verdict came down.
Yeah.
It just shows you God's hand in what's going on in this nation.
Yeah, I definitely think that God is at work here in our community, and that exactly is what is going on. So, Myra, I think you have analyzed the situation exactly correctly. And a lot of people don't think God is alive or exists or whatever. I'm here to tell you God is alive. God is active right here in Sanford, Florida. It's right there in front of us to witness and glorify in. Thank you, Myra.
Myra.
I appreciate you calling.
Myra,
don't go away. Ken Dwyer wants to say something.
Well, hi, Myra.
And how are you doing?
I'm doing super. Myra, I want to remind you that we're putting on a job fair and business resource day on September 15th, because the unemployment issue, I think, is the key. When you have young men with no occupation, idle hands are the devil's plaything.
They're going to be out there doing all the wrong things and get in all the wrong places.
Yep. All right. You're absolutely right. Okay, Myra, thanks again for calling tonight. We appreciate you. Dan, you want...
Yeah, just a minor correction. The job fair is September 14th, Saturday, not the 15th. So September 14th.
Okay, and this will be where?
The job fair will be at Faith Assembly Church. That's 9370 Curry Ford Road right here in Orlando, east side of town. It's going to be a fantastic job fair, and 9:30 to 3, I'd love to speak about it later on, too.
Okay. That's a Carl's Church.
Carl's Church. All Carl, right. You can get a job, buddy.
Yeah.
We need volunteers, yeah.
All right. Real quickly, are there any meetings of the Orange County Executive Republican Committee coming up?
That is our meeting. That's what we're doing.
That will be the meeting.
That
will be the subject matter at that month's meeting.
Well, it's actually the Small Business Alliance.
Okay.
That's what is running this, being subsidized with the ARCRAC. We have Pete Clark. So therefore, this is an opportunity for two things: people to get jobs, and also people who want to start becoming entrepreneurs. We have the Entrepreneur Center. Why don't you tell them about that?
Yeah, this is several groups that have come together. The Florida Association of Veteran-Owned Businesses is also working with the Small Biz Alliance, and the Small Biz Alliance, we're getting businesses together and trying to work as a unit and one voice. The Florida Association of Veteran-Owned Businesses, of course, is a veteran organization. We're trying to have veterans help veterans, as well as have veterans help the community. And then we're working with Commissioner Pete Clark's office for this job fair. And there's a crying out in the community for jobs. There's no question about that. This is a bunch of volunteers coming together, and we've got backing of various elected officials that are going to be speaking. We've got Congressman Mike, you're going to speak. It sounds like we're going to have Congressman Webster's probably going to be there. We'll have Commissioner Pete Clark there. But that, in addition to some roundtable panel that we're having going on, that's going to be teaching entrepreneurial skills, it's going to be teaching job seeker skills, as well as all the businesses providing jobs. It's going to be a big day. It's an incredible facility over there at Faith Assembly Church. They are being very gracious to open up their facility to us for this this purpose, and we ask everyone, please pass the word out so we can have a lot of
help people with resumes and how to actually fill out a job application, things like that, right?
Exactly. We're going to have a resume class on skills there. We're going to have interview-taking class on skills for that, for interview-taking. We're going to have talk about social media. How can it help you find a job? How can it hurt you? We're going to have a class for entrepreneurs on how they can use social media to get their business out there and to do marketing and pretty much to do it for free.
And where can people find out more about this? Your website, please.
Allbusinessoutreach.com.
That's allbusinessoutreach.com. Just spell it all out. Allbusinessoutreach.com. Okay.
And they can also go to Commissioner Pete Clark's office. They can go to his website, and from his website, once the programmers do the words to make it happen, they'll be able to actually register. Businesses can. We have sponsors for this.
Real quickly, what's Pete Clark's website?
Okay, I will have that for you in one moment.
Okay.
Well, okay, you can go to Orange County Government. Then you'll find a Board of County Commissioners. You find District 3. There's where you'll have it.
Okay. It's orangecountyfl.net. That'll get you to where you need to be. So http://orangecountyflorida.net. That'll get you to where you can find Commissioner Pete Clark. And then from there, when they build it, you'll be able to register. Tables for employers. If you have jobs available, the tables are free. So you don't have to even pay the $200 or $500 that is the general fee. We're doing everything we possibly can to make this big, and we're expecting a very large crowd.
Okay, and this is going to be when and where?
It's September 14th from 9:30 to 3 o'clock at Faith Assembly Church. And that's it's on Curry Ford Road, right by the corner of Curry Ford Road and
417.
It's Econ Trail is what they call it.
Also, how you can do business with Orange County Government. So if you have a business, we'll help you get that.
One of the classes, yes, doing business with Orange County. We're working to get that verified. I've already gotten it verified that we're going to have a class on doing business with the federal government. So these are going to be good things for businesses to be there for. It's going to be good things for job seekers, people that are thinking about starting their own business. We're going to have a class on how to start your own business put on by SCORE. So we've brought the University of Central Florida Business Incubator with the Small Business Development Center with SCORE, but we've got a lot of heavy hitters there in source material to help you, and it's all for free. Everything's for free.
Okay. All right. So that's being sponsored by All Business Outreach and the Orange County Republican Executive Committee.
And the Small Business Alliance.
The Small Business Alliance.
And the Florida Association of Veteran-Owned Businesses. Okay. Don't forget about those veterans.
All right. But it's a job fair. It's September 14th at the...
At the Faith Assembly Church.
Faith Assembly Church.
Saturday, 9:30 to 3.
9:30 to 3. If you're an employer or somebody looking for employment, this is a place you're going to want to be on that day. If you're an employer looking for employees or somebody looking for a job, and you can find out more about this at allbusinessoutreach.com. Okay, we didn't have a winner yet on our Who Said That contest. Gary called in. He dropped off the line. I'm sorry, Gary, that we couldn't get to you quicker. He guessed Thomas Jefferson. It is not Thomas Jefferson. So let me read the quote one more time for you. The American by nature is optimistic. He is experimental, an inventor, and a builder who builds best when called upon to build greatly. If you know who said that, and it was an American president of the Democratic persuasion, give us a call at 407-774-8255. And if you get it right, you'll win a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano and an American Adversaries t-shirt. And don't forget, hang on to that phone number, because in the next hour, we're also going to give away a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics. And folks, this stuff is really great. It really works on rashes, any kind of skin irritation, burn, you name it. It works on it. Everybody out there needs to have a bottle of this in your medicine cabinet. You'll throw a bunch of that other stuff that's in there away and create a bunch of space in that cabinet that you haven't had for years. Okay, so stick around. We're coming back.
That's right, folks. And speaking of giveaways, don't forget on Wednesdays at 5 o'clock, actually 5 to 6, we give away tickets for 4 to the Rays.
Well, we'll be giving some, we'll see.
Oh, we do? Oh,
the
that's right.
The package is going to change up a little bit.
Oh, we'll see. Yeah, something fancy coming up. I appreciate that, too. That's cool. Folks, you are listening to American Adversaries. Do not go away. The final hour is coming up next.
Fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American Adversaries.
Okay, I love that J.J. Cale style. Okay, folks, welcome back to the show. We are the American Adversaries, getting ready to start the third of our three-hour tour tonight. We have a full house once again. Christopher Hart and Lair Adams with you here, along with Carl Jackson. And in the studios with us, we have Ken Dwyer from the Orange County Republican Executive Committee, along with Dan Finelli. And also Dan Peterson is here, and we're going to talk with him this half hour about the Coalition for Property Rights. But we're right in the middle of our Who Said That contest, and our quote tonight is, the American by nature is optimistic. He is experimental, an inventor, and a builder who builds best when called upon to build greatly. We have two people on the line, both who have the correct answer. One's a lady and one's a man, so let's go ladies first and go to Diane from Apopka. Diane, thank you for calling tonight.
It's John F. Kennedy.
JFK, it surely is. That's right. That was easy. How did you know that?
I looked it up.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all fair. Yeah, John F. Kennedy said that. And he was, you know, and that's something that I think that he shared with Ronald Reagan, and that is that he made America proud to be Americans. you know, he was a Democrat, but he was probably the most conservative Democrat there's been certainly in that century, and was more conservative, I dare say, than some Republican presidents, Teddy Roosevelt included.
Amen to that. I don't think they would accept him in the Democrat Party today.
Oh, he would be an absolute pariah, especially with that business ass, not what your country can do for you. That seems to be the exact opposite of the theme coming out of the Democrats today.
And I don't want to take the prize, and I believe that the gentleman after me should get it because I got it last week.
Oh, well, all right. Well, thank you, Diane. I appreciate that.
And I also want to say this Roxy product is amazing.
Now, what have you been using it for?
My husband has knee issues and for months, and I just got my order, and just in the last 3 days, he is amazed.
It's the same thing with me. The first time I tried it, the rash irritation went away, and within a couple of days, the rash was gone. I mean, the stuff really is miraculous, and it is safe, it is all natural, and it's reasonably priced, and we're going to give a bottle of it away here in this hour.
And I'm giving it away also to friends who have issues. So.
And I suggest other people do it as well. Kids that have acne. This is great to treat acne with, even adults with acne. So it is all, Larry, tell them it's all natural. I mean,
it's the kelp water. I mean, it's ingredients in kelp water. And again, our blood is basically seawater. It's very similar. It has these ingredients to it that are very similar to our own nature. And it's a wonderful product for everything, from your scalp to the inside your mouth.
That's why I say even for earwax removal, everybody should have some of this in your medicine cabinet.
Well, I've spritzed it on my face, and I'm still alive, and I can still see.
So. Pass that test.
You growing gills?
All right. Thank you, Diane. We appreciate you so very much. And by the way, I, too, would like to thank you for mentioning our show on a nationally broadcast show on another station the other night. I appreciate that so very much, as does Carl. And so you'll find a little something extra in that package from your winnings from last week.
Well, I usually don't listen to him because I don't like him, but he had a guest host on.
All right. I'm the same way. I feel the same way. He takes himself way too seriously.
Oh, amen.
Okay, thank you so very much, Diane. We appreciate it.
Thanks for everything.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye.
Okay, bye. Rick, thanks for calling. Looks like you're going to win by default, my friend, but you had the right answer anyway. Do we have Rick still?
Hey, am I on?
Yeah, you're on. You win. You had the right answer, and Diane deferred to you. So.
Well, I appreciate that, Diane. I called in because I'm surprised that nobody else had it before this, because I think that was part of his challenge for the space race speech.
It was part, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I thought.
And basically, he was in his own way touting American exceptionalism, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
The American, by nature, is optimistic. He is an experimenter, an inventor, and a builder who builds best when called upon to build greatly. Great words. He was a great president, even though he was in the wrong party. But
let me say one thing.
Go ahead.
For another great quote, on an earlier caller talking about the unemployed males being the devil's play tool, there was a staff sergeant that made the statement that there is nothing more brutal on the face of this earth than a 19-year-old boy with a gun. Do you know when that was said?
That was probably said in what, World War One?
Civil War.
Civil War, yeah.
It was a Civil War staff sergeant of the Union Army, and all we have to do is look to Chicago and New York, and we can see the evidence of it.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. And stay on the line. Make sure we got your right information.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for being with us. Okay. I want to get to Dan Peterson next, but I see we have Harry from Altamont Springs who has a question for Carl. So let's take that from Harry. Harry, thank you for calling. Carl, hold on a second. We're going to need to get Carl some ears here. Just one second. Harry, thank you for calling. Okay, Harry, we're all set. Go ahead.
Carl there?
Yes, he is.
Yes. Hey, Harry.
Yeah, I've been listening to your show. I enjoy your show, too, when it's on.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's not on for the baseball, so it interferes with it a little bit.
yeah. Listen, but listen live at 8 a.m.
Have you had a chance to do a one-on-one with Tracy Martin?
With Tracy Martin, the dad?
Yes.
No, but I would absolutely love that. As a matter of fact, I have an opportunity to speak to a black congregation next week. I'm going to switch that up.
I would like for you to ask him some questions when you get to it. He's a member of the, I understand, of the Prince Hall Masonic Lodge.
Okay.
And I'd like to know, my father was a Masonic Lodge member in Stanford. I'm a native from here.
Okay.
And I think there's a, if he's still a member and active, there's some areas that I think we could work together on to maybe, if he's got such a platform right now that he really can be the man right now. Well, if he wants to.
Well, I tell you what, I'd love that opportunity. I tell you the truth, I think Chris Hart hit it right on the nose. I think there's going to have to be a little more softening of Tracy Martin's heart and forgiveness, and he's going through a healing process. But unfortunately, I feel like he's being surrounded with the wrong people.
I think some people are leading him down the wrong road.
Yeah, so we'll see, but I'll pray that
right now. He has it in his hand if he'll use it.
Yes, sir.
He can be a real force in the United States, not just here.
Well, you're absolutely right, Harry, and I pray that I get that opportunity. So I pray the same. Hopefully I'll get that opportunity. I'd love to talk with
him. I'm a white native of Seminole County, born and raised here. And I was 79 last week.
Wow.
My father, I used to go with him in 1937 when he went to the lodge meetings. He wouldn't let me come in, but it was Sanford right next to the Roots Theater, and he was very active in it. So
okay, all right.
I think there's something that the two could get together on, and if he would just slow down a little bit, maybe you could talk to him a little bit.
Well, I hope I get that chance. Thank you, Harry.
I'd like to meet with you sometime. Maybe we could compare notes.
All right, I love that too.
If I could give my number to somebody off the air, and maybe we could get together. I'd like to meet you.
Okay, we'll see if Jeff can take down your number for me.
Give Jeff send us your information there, Harry. Thank you so very much for calling. And we've expressed similar sentiments on this show in the past. We focused more on Sabrina Fulton, but certainly the both parents hold in their hands the key. If they want to really turn to healing, they hold in their hands the key. And the key is forgiveness. Okay, let's go to Dan Peterson now. Dan Peterson, you're with Coalition for Property Rights. What exactly is that organization about, and how can people become involved?
Well, great. The Coalition for Property Rights is a movement of property rights advocates. If anyone owns property, they should be a part of the Coalition for Property Rights, and it's an organization that is committed to both the promotion and the protection of private property rights. Both of those things are important. And although we're primarily a Florida organization, we reach out to 40 different states and help people with some of the property rights issues. I'm just in the middle of an issue right now with someone who's trying to develop some property on a mountaintop out in Oregon, of all places. So,
let me slow you down just a second. So this isn't necessarily a political lobbying group, although you do that too, but you also will help individuals with their own specific problems?
Absolutely.
All right, and so how can somebody find out more about this? Where can they go?
Well, great. Our website is, if they go to www.proprights, one word, proprights.com, or they can email to me at info@proprights.com, and I can talk with them.
Dan, let me ask you a question now. Is this to keep people from losing any current property rights, or is this to get property rights back that have already been taken away from citizens?
Well, actually, there's sort of a two-pronged approach here, because my observation in the United States over the last 50 or 60 years, there's an erosion of property rights.
Steady
erosion. And so part of our strategy is to be proactive and see some of those rights actually restored. So the restriction of private property is a big issue that we continue to work on. The other issue that I'm very concerned about is actually literally the elimination of private property, period. And maybe come back in the break, we can get more into that. But, I was recently at a conference with the Heritage Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it was a fascinating thing. It was actually on the environment and energy. But every issue that was discussed was about property rights. And part of the topic that was discussed at that conference was the fact that a lot of the really initial environmental laws that were passed back in the 60s, the National Environmental Policy Act, the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act. These are all laws and huge, you know, efforts that really were needed in our country at the time, because we had, you know, like Love Canal that was on fire, and we had smog in a lot of places and things that really, you know, needed to be addressed.
Leaded gas, yeah.
And they were written, and they made a tremendous difference in our nation. But they also have slowly come at the price to be paid was the erosion of the use of private mm-hmm. property, and that restriction, especially with the Clean Water Act, for instance, or endangered species. And so the laws were written so vaguely, they allow agencies like the EPA to write the rules and regulations. So we end up with unelected officials actually telling us what we can and can't do with our property.
Well, that's one of the thing that concerns me the most, so I want to take that up with you when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Dan Peterson about the state of property rights here in the state of Florida and the United States in general. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
That's right, we're the American Adversaries. Thank you, Mr. Kale. You will be missed. Larry Adams here with the American Adversaries and my co-host, Christopher Hart. We have a studio full of people, but we were talking with Dan Peterson. And we were talking about property rights. And one point I wanted to bring up, we talked about during the break, is the Agenda 21 that we've spoken about on this program before and how far-reaching it is. And I was asking Dan if this has anything to do with what he's talking about. His basic response was, ooh, yeah. Right, Dan?
Yes, sir. No, what I found is, I think of it more as the what I would call the sustainable development movement, because that's what it's all about. And it goes into, I know it goes into a million different directions, but there's an interesting quote that caught my attention when I first started studying this, and it was out of a UN conference that really dates back to the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it said that land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset controlled by individuals. So how about that? Or private land ownership is the principal instrument for the accumulation and concentration of wealth and contributes to social injustice. Or public control of land is indispensable to its protection as an asset. Public control means government control.
Yes.
And so I began to study
government ownership.
Government
right.
ownership and control. That's exactly right. And so our whole country was founded upon private property and property ownership, property rights, and liberty. And ownership and use of property were simultaneous with the founding fathers.
Oh, I believe, as a matter of fact, Jefferson and one of them said that without property rights, you do not have liberty. I mean, if the king owns everything, what do you have? Nothing.
One of the favorite quotes I like is from one of the early colonists by the name of Arthur Lee. He said, "The right of property is the guardian of every other right." So
right.
Just what you said,
mm-hmm.
if you lose that right, all the others go away, because
you have nothing.
You can't house yourself, you can't protect yourself, you can't feed yourself. You are totally dependent on a landlord. And that's why our country was in part founded. Freedom of religion, I would say, was a big part of that, but also the freedom to own property and to take care of yourself.
And one of the biggest threats that I see is something you mentioned right before we went to the break, and that is the overregulation of us. They don't necessarily take our property away, but they regulate away our ability to use it. And, of course, the EPA is one of the agencies to do that. And this administration finds all kinds of agencies to do that sort of thing. How do we thwart that?
Well, that's one of the things that I'm talking to some legislators even here in Florida about, is how can we restore some of the property rights that have been lost. Now, some of these are federal issues, and they need to go on a nationwide scale. But a lot of times people get out there, and I've worked with people on these cases. They get out, they want to use their property, and all of a sudden they're being scaled back with wetlands and government demanding, well, you need to do this for us so that you can get your permit to use your property the way you would like to. There was recently a Supreme Court case where we worked with a family by the name of Kuntz and a lot of other organizations.
This is the local family, right?
This was from Orange County, yeah. Out at East mm-hmm. Orange County. It was a Supreme Court case, and for those who maybe didn't know about it, Coy Kuntz Sr. owned property roughly just under 20 acres out on Eastern Orange County. He wanted to develop on the approximately 3 acres of mm-hmm. that. So the St. John's Water Management District mm-hmm. asked him, that'd be fine, but we want you to deed the rest of that property over to Conservation Wetlands.
In other words, give the other 17 of the 20 acres
exactly.
to them.
And as it turns out, that wasn't even wetlands. But anyway, so he agreed to that because he wanted to develop this other 3 acres and stuff. So he met all, he complied with everything they asked him to do. And then at the last minute, they came to him and said, now, before we can issue this permit to you, we have something else you'd like for us to do. About 5 to 7 miles over here, we have flood area that we need to have some repairs done to it, and we'd like you to do that for us before we issue the permit. And when he added up the cost, it was about $150,000.
And it was nowhere near his property, would not have benefited his project at all.
Totally separate.
Totally separate, just out of the blue.
And that's when he went to court, and it finally worked its way up to the management district said, you don't have the right to come at us and appeal this. And it went to the Supreme Court, and they found in favor of the Kuntz family. Now, that whole process, by the way.
The old man died in the process, didn't he?
Kuntz Sr. Died in about halfway through, mm-hmm. and his son picked it up, fortunately. This whole process, by the way, took 19 years.
Right.
And that's another way that,
Dan, what makes that different from extortion? Can you explain to me why that is any different than the mafia coming in and saying, you got to grease our palms to operate your business?
The official word is exaction, but you're exactly right. It is extortion. It's demanding something. And that's what the Supreme Court said, that you can't extort like this.
By the way, folks, we're talking with Dan Peterson from the Coalition for Property Rights, and he does go around and give presentations to various groups. If you have a group or organization or church that you think you would like Dan to speak at, please contact him, and you can reach him once again at, and I wrote it down here, Dan.
info@proprights.com.
That's it. Info, there you go.
This is super important, folks.
info@proprights.com. And you can find out more about the Coalition for Property Rights at proprights.com. And Dan's a very effective speaker, as you can tell, and he's very well informed, and we're just scratching the surface here tonight with the time we have. But if you would like to hear more about this and have him speak in front of your group, email him at info@proprights.com. Dan, what are some key upcoming issues that we need to be on the lookout for?
Okay, regarding the limitation of private property, I did want to mention thing that's interesting. One of the things that's going on in our country is the use of regional coordination groups, not to take property so much, but to coordinate them. It's not very well known, but the current administration through the Department of Interior has a thing called the National Blueways System. And what they do is they take a river from its origin, its spring, to its mouth, and all of its tributaries, including its entire watershed, and they wait for a select group of what they call stakeholders to come forward and say, can we be named a Blueways System, a National Blueways System River? And the Connecticut River is the first one that's done this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I researched this, all of these quote-unquote stakeholders are mostly what I would say the people who are on the environmentalist or the extreme environmentalist movement. So they come together. They get to use Department of Interior dollars to create policies that will guard the water and the air and the natural resources, quote-unquote. And so, again, here you have an unelected body that basically is working directly with Department of Interior to create these policies that will restrict the use of land and what you want to do there. So that's the National Blueway System, and that's just one of the system. There's another one that's...
Well, real quickly, don't they also want to use taxation? I mean, a special tax to implement all of this?
Well, I suppose that could be done, but I think a tax would have to run through Congress, whereas
this was around, Ken's going to bring this up, I think. This was a special way to get around that the Obama administration has come up with.
Okay, well, we have a hard break we're coming up on. We're going to continue this conversation. When we come back, I invite you to call at 407-774-8255 if you'd like to get in on this. And hang on to that phone number, because in the next segment, we're we're going to give away a bottle of Roxy Pacifics. This is great stuff, folks. You really need to get your hands on some of this. 407-774-8255 is the number. We're the American Adversaries, and we are live.
Millery loves company, and his old dog sings harmony. Tambourine tied to his tail.
Okay, we are back. We are the American Adversaries, and we are paying tribute to J.J. Cale, who passed away last Friday, July 26th. You didn't know that,
no,
Dan Peterson?
No.
Yeah, that's why we're playing his music tonight. Okay, folks, that is Dan Peterson. He's in the studio with us. He's from Coalition for Property Rights. You can find more out about that at PropRights.com. You can email Dan at info@PropRights.com, and he'd love to come out and speak in front of your group about property rights and where they're going, where they've been, and what you may be looking for next. And once again, it is now time to give away a bottle of Roxy Pacifics. Roxy Pacifics is all natural kelp water. It's an antibacterial and anti-inflammatory. It's good for what ails you, folks. If you've got any problems with your skin, try this stuff on it. For $15, you can get a 1 ounce bottle, and that's plenty enough to find out if it's going to work for you. And if it does, I guarantee you, you're going to go back and get a refill. And you can get a bottle of Roxy Pacifics by going to RoxyPacifics.net. That's R-O-C-Z-E-Y Pacifics with an X.net. Or give Ed Roxy a call at 619-654-4829. That's 619-654-4829. The first caller at 407-774-8255 and says they want a bottle, and you say you want a bottle of Roxy Pacifics, it is yours. 407-774-8255 is the number. Okay, thanks for being with us tonight. Also in the studio, we have Ken Dwyer and Dan Finelli, and they're holding a jobs fair that's coming up in September. Please, once again, real quick, the quick specifics.
September 14th at Faith Assembly Church. That's off of a Curry Ford Road. It's from 9:30 to 3 o'clock on September, Saturday the 14th.
And if you're an employer and you're looking to hire an employees and they would like to be involved in this, how do they get involved?
Okay, you can go to Commissioner Pete Clark's website. You can call my cell phone if you need questions, 407-844-7632. You could call me, or you can go to Commissioner Pete Clark's. I say that because they're right now doing the program. They'll be working on it tomorrow to get the website up to date so people can register. It's not ready at this moment, but okay. You can call me. We free tables for employers who have jobs. We've got job seeker training. We've got entrepreneur training. It's going to be a great day. It's an incredible location. Please come on out.
Okay, one more time, your phone number. For somebody like
this is Dan Finelli. I'm actually the vice chair of the Florida Association of Veteran-Owned Businesses. We're co-chairing it, and my cell phone is 407-844-7632.
Okay, we have a caller, Barb, from Palm Beach County, who would like to talk with us tonight. Barb, thank you for calling. We appreciate you being out there.
Okay, thanks. Yes, gentlemen, I just wanted to remind Dan of another threat that we have, I think, to property rights, and that is this water, land, and legacy constitutional amendment that former Governor and Senator Bob Graham is pushing. There's a petition that's sponsored by the Audubon Society, and they have their 10% already to get this on the ballot next year. And that would be to set aside X number of cents of the dock stamp tax, you know, when people sell property, for buying land. I mean, this state and this county, in addition to the federal government, has been on a land buying spree for ad infinitum. So we really need to watch out for that constitutional amendment and not sign on to it.
Barb, don't go away. Dan, we were talking about this during one of the breaks. You wanted to bring this up, so have at it.
Well, yeah, this is, you know, and this relates to the second issue. It's one thing to restrict private property rights. It's another thing to literally eliminate private property. I don't know if the listeners are aware of this, but one out of every 3 acres of the United States is owned by the federal government. I heard a congressman from Utah speak. 87% of Utah is owned by the federal government. It's wildlands and things like that.
Sure.
Can you imagine what that does to the tax base if you're a state government trying to run an education system? You only have 13% of your land to work with and to, you know, to tax for that purpose.
That means the people that live on that land pay a much higher rate.
Exactly. Now, in Florida here, I did some research on this. In Florida, I don't know if you're aware of this, but 27% of Florida is already in conservation.
Wow.
That's about 17% federally owned, and I think 14%, something like that, that's owned
by the state.
12% by the state.
State and local governments.
And then you have local governments as well. And I got pretty concerned about that because it's like, how much conservation land do we need? And we don't even have the funding to maintain the conservation lands we have right now.
That's why they have to extort money from people like that you were just talking about.
That could be. But to the caller, this is a petition drive, and the name of this is going to be called the Purchase of Conservation Lands Initiative. It's really being run out of there's a group in Washington, D.C., by the name of, the Conservative Campaigns, it's what it's called, or Conservation Campaigns. And they help local people with state issues, ballot initiatives all over the United States. And I did a little research on them. And they're a big group. In the last, I guess, 10 years or so, they've raised more than $36, $37 million to run these campaigns. They're working locally in our state with a group called Florida Conservation Coalition, which is headed by...
So this is an amendment that may end up on our ballot next year. Is there a drive to thwart this movement toward this amendment?
Well, assuming they have the signatures, we'll be working very hard to inform people. In fact, when I go around and speak, this is one of my issues right now, is to inform people about this.
Perfect.
Because, you know, the way it's going to sound is, man, we're going to...
They're going to make it sound all flowery and good and something we all want.
But again, we already have 27% of our property in Florida that is in conservation. And, you know, we have great needs in our state, whether it's Medicaid or education, things like that that we have to take care of, and we're not maintaining the land that we have. So why would we want to go out and, you know, go and buy more?
Sure. Well, but this lends the great myth that land is wealth, and if we stop the wealthy from controlling the country, we're going to have utopia.
But
land is not wealth. The property is only the means by which we can earn in itself.
Right.
It is a tool. All it is a promise when we have property rights that when we work hard, we can accumulate things and it will be called property. My stuff is mine. You take that away, we are slaves.
And that's about the size of it. By the way, Tim won the bottle of Roxy Pacifics. And don't forget, folks, we'll be giving away another bottle of Roxy Pacifics next week. And if you haven't gotten a bottle, you might want to just go out and spend the $15 and get you a bottle of it. It is great stuff. Everybody needs to have some of this in your medicine cabinet. It's great for yourself. It's great for kids. And you can even use it on pets. So get yourself a bottle of Roxy Pacifics. Congratulations to Tim. We're just about out of time. Dan, I'll let you make the last point here.
I just wanted to make one comment on the caller's issue. For those who might want to see a copy of the petition, I have a two-page item I can send to him on email. So if they send me an email and request that, I'll be glad to send it back to him. Also on our website, probably in about 3 to 4 days, we'll also have a copy of this up here. And you mentioned Agenda 21 when I first heard about it. I just read the thing myself and wrote a 5-page summary of it, which is also on our website. It's under the tab called e-library, and people can find it. There's a couple clicks there, and they can get to that.
And that website is proprights.com. That's proprights.com. And if you would like Dan Peterson to come and speak in front of your church or group or organization, contact him at info@proprights.com. That's info at PropRights.com. Don't go away, folks. We still have one more segment to go. When we come back, we've got Larry's closing comments and Johnny Guns with some WTF news and Magnolia by J.J. Cale.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to the American Adversaries Live this Sunday evening on 660 AM WORL. I am Carl Jackson, sitting in studio with Christopher Hart, Lair Adams, Johnny Guns, Tyler Israel, Nostra Dennis, a full house, and Jeff Sinis controlling the board. And anyway, this is the time where we go to...
I'm sorry.
I was confused there. I was looking at...
We didn't know.
We're easy. All right. Well, anyway, thanks, guys. I'll do my little quickie closing here. Folks, yesterday I had so much fun. I went water skiing with friends for the first time in 20 years.
Wow.
I was a little rusty, but got up right away. And guys, in two trips out... never even got my hair wet. Now, I must admit, I had trepidations getting into the water. Not because we were in the St. John's River and saw several alligators. Not because of the insane boat drivers that are so clueless of people in the water. No, the cause of my uneasiness as I slipped into the tannin-colored wetness was something my father offhandedly mentioned about a neighbor of ours when I was a boy. His name was Phil Pence. He was in his late 40s, early 50s, and one day was out water skiing in the river behind his house. He was a good skier, so everyone was stunned when he seemed to not fall, but collapse on his skis. He was quickly rescued, but non-responsive, and the emergency room staff quickly diagnosed Mr. Pence's problem. He'd had a stroke. Back then, recovering from stroke was rare, and Mr. Pence never would. He died a little each day for several years until the inevitable. Now, if all this wasn't bad enough, my father had to make the statement, yeah, poor Phil Pence, he just had to keep up with the young guys. Now, many of you know I'm pretty athletic. I definitely push the envelope and lead a very active lifestyle. I'm also several years older than Mr. Pence was when he had his stroke. So now you know what was racing through my mind as I'm slipping into the murky water. It wasn't the struggle to get into my skis, deal with the ski rope, or watch for friendly, bloodthirsty gators. It was my dad's words, keeping up with the young guys. Of course, I know I'm going to have a stroke before I even get my bathing suit wet, but I made it and had fun. Even though I knew more men have strokes working under cars or under kitchen sinks than skiing, I had that irrational fear. How about you? You got any of those? For instance, does it bother you to go on really long or high bridges? Now, I'm sure far less people have died in bridge collapses than, say, slips and falls in the bathtub. Heck, Mama Cass choked to death on a sandwich. Elvis died on the toilet. I'll bet way more people died of strokes while water skiing than bridge disasters. Hey, I'm starting to feel normal. The thing about irrational fears is we use so much rational thinking to develop them. Our brilliant human brains have one flaw the dumb animals don't have, an immobilizing, often overwhelming fear of what might or could happen. See, this goes against the reality of nature that tells us in every moment, every event, thousands of possibilities exist. To worry about any one of them is irrational. So don't worry, and don't sweat the small stuff, listeners, and have a glorious week.
Very well put there, Lair. And you managed to mention Elvis, whose anniversary of his death is coming up here. And
then we won't talk about him dying on the toilet. Okay.
I didn't know he passed away that way, but so did Gandolfini, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it's a side effect of the drugs. All the drugs that he did basically makes your intestines go numb, and they can't function. And so struggling when you're on the commode. And okay,
and that can cause heart attacks.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yep, the side effect of pain-killing drugs. Okay, let's go now to Johnny Guns, who has some other useful information for us, I'm sure.
And this is something that everyone should fear. WTF News.
Amen to that, brother.
All right, there were so many stories I had a hard time picking three, so let's get to them.
All right.
A cleaning crew has found an unexpected mess after arriving at the Sea Dog Brew Pub on Nantucket. They found a 5-foot-long shark blocking the door. Nantucket's Public Works Department hauled away the shark after its discovery around 7 a.m. Thursday. But pub manager Jimmy Agnew said the pub fielded calls and questions all day long after word about the land shark got out. He said even a comedian whose band performs at the pub posted a series of jokes about it on Facebook, suggesting that the shark went to the Sea Dog Brew Pub to meet his chums. Agnew said, yeah, I don't think he's a very good comedian. Agnew says that he doesn't know why anyone would have dumped the sea creature there. Now, I'm no meteorologist, but I believe that the shark's appearance in front of the pub was the result of a sharknado.
Oh, my God.
Something smells fishy.
Lots of groans and moans.
Last week, you know, we talked about a specific type of bicycle seat.
Yeah.
Well, this week comes a story about helping men, shall we say, fill out those seats. There's been a sizable increase in the number of men who are getting plastic surgery, and the number of men getting tushy surgery has almost tripled in the past 15 years.
No way.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. 46-year-old Jeff Vickers had fat from his love handles injected into his junkless trunk. The only way to pump up your derriere is with your wallet, said Vickers. A fellow former pancake posterior, identified only as Michael, got an $8,500 birthday present in the form of a new behind, said entrepreneur Matthew, and I'm not making this name up, Butlean. Said, quote, with the trend going towards slimmer pants, you're able to see the assets underneath a whole lot better. And if plopping down $10,000 for a perkier patootie is a little expensive, well, there are cheaper temporary enhancement options like the Ghost Software Super Padded Brief and the Calvin Klein Body Booty Trunk. When asked if he would ever consider a fanny fix, Nostradamus said, again?
You walk out.
How about a couple of potatoes in your hip pockets?
Tyler?
Or can you just see someone walking into they're a plastic surgeon and asking for that J-Lo booty?
Obviously Dennis doesn't have to worry about that now.
Especially if his name is John. When is Obamacare going to pay for this? This is necessary.
What a segue. Speaking of Obama, the University of Connecticut women's basketball team visited the White House on Wednesday to celebrate their record-tying 8th NCAA national championship. They met with President Obama, presenting him with a Huskies jacket and posing for pictures. In his speech, Obama joked that Coach Gino Auriemma spends more time at the White House than some presidents do. Later in his remarks, Obama mentioned that he picked Baylor in the women's bracket. A player behind him responded, mm-hmm, to which the president retorted, mm-hmm. Somebody back there is like, mm-hmm. Then he snapped his finger as in a no you didn't gesture. Then as the team posted for pictures with the president, Obama got some bunny ears courtesy of Husky center Stephanie Dolson. Dolson then posted to Twitter casually giving the president bunny ears. Had a great time being with the team. Oh, and the president. Which leads the question, if you had a chance, would you give the president bunny ears in a photo? And yes, Chris, you have to use both fingers.
The middle finger of each hand?
I was going to give him bunny ears with one up and one down. Okay, thank you so very much, Johnny Guns. Thank you, Lara Adams. Great, great from both of you. Great work. I want to thank Carl Jackson also and Noster Dennis and Tyler Israel. We couldn't do this show without you guys. And don't forget, folks, Carl Jackson has his very own show every Saturday morning live from 8 to 9 a.m. Once again, yesterday, Carl, a great show. And if you can't catch him live, you can catch a replay at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And don't forget, Marshall Polston is also part of our team here, and he has a live show Saturday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. Okay, folks, so we're going to wrap up the show a little bit early tonight so we can leave you with a full version of Magnolia by J.J. Cale. I hope you enjoy it. J.J. Cale did pass away July 26. He's a great rock and roll songwriter and rocker himself. So God bless J.J. Cale, and God bless you, ladies and gentlemen. And we will see you tomorrow night, Lair and I, with the American Adversaries Drive Time. Okay, folks, that's going to wrap it up for tonight. So night, everybody.
Get back to you.